I'd like to start this episode by thanking a few of our patrons, specifically Mark Sandifer, Tom Lucero, and Andog.
What's Andog?
About 350. Thank you very much, patrons. We appreciate you. If you'd like to join them, head on over to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about the Pokemon Trading Card Game, which is a collectible card game developed by Hudson Soft and Creatures and published by Nintendo for the Game Boy Color in 2000.
Yeah, Hudson Soft, the old 20s action star, and all of his various creatures. This is a Gary pick. This is me continuing to say we don't need a narrative in the show. We can just talk about systems.
Yeah,
let's do it. This is something I want to do for friggin' ever.
Yeah,
this game is near and dear to my heart.
Same. We have wandered straight into the Cole Ross nostalgia zone.
Excellent. Yeah, it's also the Gary Butterfield nostalgia zone. Yeah. We're sharing zones.
Overlapping zone theory. And also, this will be like nostalgic for a whole number of people, roughly, in our cadre. Just because, this was everything for a while and still continues to be.
Yeah.
Not so much the Game Boy Color adaptation of the game, but it is impossible not to also talk about the trading card game because it's the same game.
Yeah. Like it went into hibernation for a little while and now it's bigger than anything. This is also my soft shoe way of like getting a trading card game
on the show. Yeah.
Like I love, deck builders, but I also, that genre specifically, but I also love collectible trading card games and video game adaptions of such.
Yeah.
And this is the kindness. So when you enjoy this game, just think about how much absolutely worse it could have been if I tied you to the tracks and made you play Chandelar, Duels of the Planeswalker, the Microprose Magic the Gathering game.
I think you're overestimating how much I would disdain that. I just don't have history with Magic is the thing.
It's really obtuse and clunky. Okay. It's a pretty rough game. But we'll still do it someday. I'll probably throw it on Abject Suffering just to, unless you stay sweet. it's a goofy mood. So this is a Game Boy game that simulates playing the Pokemon trading card game. That existed at the time of its release, as it is. Like all collectible card games, they evolve to no longer resemble their former selves whatsoever. After playing this, I had a real like, what's been going on with the Pokemon trading card game? And read a bunch of the new cards, and my mind was blown by the power creep.
I don't want to have to learn how to EV Max or to Jolt Star. Anything.
You Jolt Star, you Frame Jab, like it's all stuff like that. This is a very simplified but still broken in the way that early trading card games are. And it's a fun little snapshot of that.
Yes. So this is like the base set plus like the first three. So up through like Fossil, I think is what it was.
Yes.
And because, the Game Boy version is inseparable from the actual card game, it makes sense to talk about the card game first and then talk about how the Game Boy game adapts it, right?
Yes, but worth mentioning that this is a snapshot of how this played in the late 90s. If you currently play the Pokemon trading card game, a lot of this won't make sense. We're going to say a lot of wrong things, and I'm just cutting people off. We're talking about old school Pokemon trading card game. I know the rules have changed. Things that are incredibly overpowered in this game and early on in the game have been banned, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I could be rolling up with a Hitmonchan to run your Haymaker.
Yeah. Yeah. Or energy removal being basically free, and you just can make the most annoying deck that's ever been.
Oh, yeah.
Which is great to do against a computer, but horrible to do against your fellow man.
Oh, war crime. Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about the creation of the card game itself. So it originally came out. I was surprised at this, like, basically released almost at the same time as the original Pokemon games in Japan. So, like, Pokemon Red and Green came out in February of 1996, and then this came out in October. So this was, like, right in the barrel.
Yeah, yeah. Big push across the bow. The development of this game was overseen by Tsunakazu Ishihara, the founder of Creatures and eventual president of the Pokemon Company.
Yeah. Weirdly hard to find, like, oral history, like, anything about the thought process or that went into the creation of this, just because it is Japanese corporate stuff.
Well, and it's you know, I can't look at this outside of a context of Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's really interesting to see this, because Magic had a patent on a bunch of its core mechanics. This feels like, at the time and with the level of imagination available, what you would do if you filled in the mechanics they hadn't done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, this is just an alternative to a lot of those things.
Yes.
You know, and we'll discuss those differences as we get there.
So in the U.S., it took a little while for these to get here, the cards. It was published by Wizards of the Coast from 1999 to 2003 before Nintendo and the Pokemon Company took it back over. Yeah. Nintendo going back to their roots as a card game publisher
as a trading card. Yeah.
Yeah.
This game was huge. It did go into hibernation for a while, but in the late 90s, when I first had these and played these cards, this was absolutely huge. Beatles, like, you know, phenomenon for a long time. And then, you know, had tournaments and everything. It was basically, at the time, like, it was this and Magic for a long time, and then Yu-Gi-Oh! For a time, with a couple other things that got some traction. But in the late 90s, during my hardcore collectible card game period, it was this and Magic. And then it went through the life cycle that a long running card game does. New sets, new rule changes, official tournaments that change things, ban lists, restricted lists, rules changes, things like that.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much up there between this, Magic, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Are the big three collectible card games.
Yeah. I got out of this around the time Yu-Gi-Oh! Came along. I dabbled in the Dragon Ball Z card game that released shortly after this one did, and never really got into Magic aside from playing with, like, the starter deck plus a few odds and ends that that my brother had. But Pokemon, man, I was so into this. Like, every Saturday morning I would go to the Toys R Us to play in their Pokemon League, and then it was, I think, Sunday mornings it was at Comic Adventures in Mansfield, Ohio. Used to be there, old, like, scudgy comic shop that had like card tables in the back, you know, just basically, like, playing tournaments. Never won, like, never got the whole box of all that, because I was a stupid kid and I was playing against, like, 22-year-olds. But
yeah, who are playing it like a game, like that. Yes. That is the same arc I went through with Magic, like, where I was non-competitive, you know, even though I liked it a lot and played with my friends. People who are smarter than me absolutely, you know, wiped my ass. That's not what that phrase is, but, you know, people who are smarter than me did wipe my ass.
It was lovingly in a general gentle sense.
Yeah. Gentle and they necessary. Got some wet ones and apply it to my dry one.
Oh, my love, my darling.
My friends and I played this a little bit, but I got into this at the tail end of my friends being into card games.
Okay.
And it was a harder sell for my friends, because I'm a little older than you are. So my friends who were still into Magic were less jazzed by this. But I liked Pokemon a lot at the time. Not even the video games. I watched the cartoon.
Yes.
And were just kind of intrigued by the critters. So I got into kind of both. But my actual time playing the trading card game was not extensive. I had a lot of the cards. I made decks and everything. I did the very sad little like solo trading card game kind of thing you can do at home where you play against yourself or you pit two decks against each other, that kind of thing. But I didn't play a lot with people. That was more Magic for me because of the timeline.
I still have all of my old cards.
Ooh.
Yeah. So that is neat. None of them are worth anything. I've checked just to make sure I was just to make sure I wasn't sitting on something. I have a foil Charizard, but it is the second edition or whatever, like the re-release. So basically I would get more money by burning it. The warmth that would produce would be, but someday I can impress my nephews, who both really love their Pokemon cards. So
it's interesting, with this coming back with the kids, because, so I go to a lot of game stores, and there are, at least in Portland, I don't know how universal this is. There are still Magic is the game that is being played at game stores. Mm-hmm. Like there isn't a lot of Pokemon being played there. Where I find Pokemon is in like trading card shows and stuff. I think that there's a huge market for this as a game to own rather than play. If I go to, so like the mall will have like a baseball card show, and the baseball card show is half Pokemon cards. But they're not like kids there. It's all people, you know, our age or 10 years younger than us. You know, I it's real rare. I know some kids, my friends who have kids, their kids play Pokemon. So I think it gets played on the playground, but it's interesting. It didn't age up with the audience. Like the people who are our age collect this now and don't play it. And kids play it.
Yes.
Is what it, at least what it seems like from going, you know, and I'm only regional, but just from going to game stores around here.
I think a big part of this coming back was also pandemic stuff. It's easy to forget that that started like 3 years ago, but I remember seeing like news stories, like, you know, because everybody forgot how to act in public, like actual, like straight up like fisticuffs, like people fighting over these things at Targets and things.
To the point
where I was at Target a couple days ago and I was like, oh, let me check out the Pokemon card section.
And you pile drove a kid to get
I ruined that kid. His mom will not love him anymore.
I know. He doesn't have what we humans call a head any longer. There's just kind of a hole that urine comes out of. You have to hold him over the toilet like you're getting his lunch money.
He probably shouldn't have cut in front of me in line though. But there were still signs up about like, hey, come see an attendant, only so many cards per person kind of thing. Huge loss prevention kind of deal.
The other weird thing where I see it all the time is on Facebook Marketplace. Like I go to garage sales and there are binders of Pokemon cards. It's really interesting, like the way it's positioned now. I have those kids who I know, they're my friend's kids. I keep thinking we're gonna babysit them at some point. I'm like, yeah man, bring some decks. Let's like absolutely, you know, wipe my ass with Pokemon here. I'm looking forward to that. I'm more of a Magic kid, but I also like this. And in terms of video games, this was huge to me.
I was really excited when this came out because I didn't need to go to a special event. I didn't need to like coerce friends into playing it.
And you can have all of the cards. You know, it's just your patience. You know, you just get anything you want, basically. So this video game basically emulates or the card game as well emulates a Pokemon battle from the RPGs. It is a simpler version of Magic the Gathering, and the absolute number one thing that makes it simpler, I was trying to think of like why you couldn't do a Game Boy Color Magic thing, is you don't do things on other people's turns. Your turn happens and their turn happens. Magic has a whole thing of like interrupting people or responding. The main simplification that I think that the Pokemon card game did was getting rid of that. You don't make choices on your opponent's turn generally. That is kind of what is the load bearing thing that allows this to be an easier card game to learn and digitizable on the Game Boy Color.
There's no like Path of Exile flowchart of like sub round action kind of things. Like that is, you know, I've never really tried that hard to get into Magic. When I have tried, you know, like in, you know, when I was younger or so, it was very difficult to, you know, for me to, you know, understand, you know, those opportunities that I should have taken. And I really just felt like I was slowing the other person down and annoying them through by the process of learning. Right.
It's really just like, it's gotten really complicated. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Magic is a great game. It's just, it is a hard game to get your head around. It's really just, you can do things in reaction to stuff. Yeah. And once you know the things you can do, you just keep an eye on it. But then you also have to learn your cards. Like there's more information on the cards generally. There are more keywords, things like that.
Yeah.
It's just getting a vocabulary.
Yeah. But this is simpler. We're going to talk about the rules here. This is not by virtue of trying to like explain what you read in the pamphlet that comes with a starter deck. Really, I think talking about what a round is shaped like and what a game is shaped like, to me, the value in that is like sketching the bounds of like what strategies you might use and what situations play out, right?
Well, yeah, and it'll apply to the game as well.
Yes.
You know, generally, which we're going to explain, because this is a very narrative-like game. You know, there's not a whole lot to talk about other than these kind of strategies, which is A-okay. Mm-hmm. Each player has a deck of 60 cards. These are composed of Pokemon, trainer cards, and energy cards. And you initially lay out six prize cards, up to six. So yes, in the video game, it's 3, 4, or 6. These are from the top of your deck. And then you draw your hand of 7 cards.
Right. And you choose an active Pokemon that you put out. This is the one who's going to be doing all the fighting, taking all the damage. And you can put up to 5 Pokemon on your bench. So you can see immediately how this is taking the shape of of, you know, how a Pokemon battle goes. You've got the, you know, the 5 on your belt and the, you know, the 1 out in the arena.
Yes. Each turn you draw a card and then you have some optional actions. Yep. You can, if you have room on your bench, you can place a basic Pokemon onto the bench. You can place 1 energy card per turn and you place these directly onto a Pokemon. It can either be on your active Pokemon or on the bench. You can evolve a Pokemon, so you can throw its evolution on top of it. You can use as many trainer cards from your hand as you want. This is the hilarious thing that makes this video game super broken in retrospect sense. Like, oh, this is ludicrous. How did this get past playtesting? Like, you can use a special Pokemon ability. These are downplayed in the actual video game. There aren't very many of them. I remember this being a bigger thing at the table. And then if you'd like, you can finish your turn with an attack. And the way that your Pokemon is powered is by having energy to match the attack. So the attack will have a cost. You have to have at least that much energy attached to your Pokemon and of the correct types.
And you do not burn energy. You do not use it up using that, unless it is specifically stated. There are certain types of Pokemon whose moves generally will burn those if you need to.
It's a fire type. Kind of thing generally. And there's also things that aren't strictly attacks. These can be abilities as well. You know, like Kangaskhan lets you draw a card. It's not, you're not hurting the opponent, but you're doing their ability, and you just have to have a certain amount of energy for that.
Like Metapod has in the game, it's hardened, but here it's stiffened. I don't think either one works out very well.
It used to be a reptile. It used to be boner eyes.
My Metapod's got a boner. Turgid.
Metapod loves me.
You know, it will nullify any damage that comes the next turn, right? Stuff like that. If you want to pull an active Pokemon back to the bench and bring another one up, there is a retreat cost. So, you know, attacking generally doesn't spend energy, but you have to discard energy off of your active Pokemon in order to bring it back. And this is a big thing for like early game, you know, generally the bigger and slower or more resilient or powerful a Pokemon is, the more it costs to bring it back.
Yes. Yeah. This is part of their balance, each card along with HP.
Yes.
This is the amount of damage they can take before they're knocked out and discarded. And then you choose one of your Pokemon from the bench to put in its place.
Yeah.
The reason why you might want to retreat a Pokemon, other than just wanting to use another Pokemon, is deny your opponent prizes.
Yes.
When you or your opponent knock out a Pokemon, you get to grab one of the prize cards, which are drawn from your deck. So these are not your opponent's cards. It's not like Anti and Magic. Mm-hmm. And this is a double feature. This is a win condition. It's a victory point, essentially. And then it's also card draw.
Nice.
It is card advantage. So it's a pretty big prize. You do not want to be throwing away your Pokemon willy-nilly because you are helping your opponent in unseen ways.
Yes. Yeah. You win a match when all of your prizes are drawn, or when your Pokemon, when your opponent has no Pokemon left in their play area. This is a place where bad deck composition or like bad luck in drawing will fuck you over. Like, well, shit, all I've got is a Rattata. Well,
yep.
Or if your opponent decks out, which means they don't have any cards left to draw.
Yes. This game has some status effects that will be attached to certain moves. And the way these work is they will stick to an enemy either automatically, and then they will have a coin flip to get rid of it, or they stick on an enemy with a successful coin flip. One of the things that in my mind feels like bad game design in this, even though I love this game, is this coin flip. Mechanic. It is necessarily super swingy. Obviously having a 50% chance to do things. If you look at the GameFAQs message board for the video game version of this, absolutely chock-a-block with guys freaking out about their negative streaks of like getting tails, you know, 18 times in a row. You know, and not just what Sonic does at the sidekick draft. Like,
hey, you got there, buddy.
It took me a second.
But man, the way the coin flips work in this is super interesting. They're predetermined.
Yes.
And because this game does like an autosave after each action, if you try to save scum to see if it goes the other way, that is not going, it's going to be the same every time. So like when you start a match, it's almost like they draw, you know, they shuffle a deck.
Yeah.
So it's not probabilistic, at least not in the way that you might think a video game would normally randomize things.
The fix was in.
Yes.
You know, so it does mean that you are going to end up with these ludicrous streaks.
Yeah.
Right. Like there are times where you just want to finish off your opponent. They have no chance of winning, but you just can't fucking unparalyze your guy that are kind of maddening.
Yeah.
You know, and a coin flip in general is very random. 50-50 is not weighted odds. You know, as from a game design perspective, I don't love this. From a playing this video game perspective, I'm fine with it.
Also from a game design perspective, the fact that these are also similar except for poison and confusion is a bit of a bummer. You know, the fact that paralysis and sleep are basically the same thing except for
when you do the flip.
When you do the flip, or how many opportunities you have to do a flip, right?
Kind of a bummer. And this is similar to things that are just that do non-named status things, like opponent cannot attack. You know, which are basically status effects. They just don't have a name. You know, they wanted to get the challenge of this game and adapting this to a card game was taking the wide variety of like an elemental system, which we also have, like there are weaknesses and stuff. We'll talk about that. But the wide variety of things a Pokemon can do and translating them to a combat game like this. And turn denial is king. It's the only thing you can really do meaningfully to your opponent in this. You know, they're kind of a bummer. It is okay. You can have great success with a status effect deck. A status effect deck will drive you nuts and body you. It's all down to the coin flip.
Yes. So like poison does what you'd expect. Does 10 damage to the added Pokemon. Devastating.
Every turn.
Every turn.
It's not just on, you know, so you do it to them. You know, they'll take their turn, you know, in between turns. It does 10 damage rather. So it happens basically twice for each round. Poison is absolutely incredible. Poison, best status effect, hands down.
The one that is seen that seems most common, like the most cards have access to it, is paralysis. This will stop the active Pokemon from attacking or retreating. You check for paralysis for a cure of it at the beginning of each turn on a coin flip. And it's cured automatically after a turn. So there's a chance that like you flip the coin and succeed in paralyzing the person, the Pokemon, not the person. You don't bane the other kid. But there's a chance that it'll stick, and then the next turn they flip, and then it's gone again. Right.
Yeah. Yep. One thing really quick of note is I think that there are mechanics. One of the things they did to kind of mitigate this in later Pokemon, and mm-hmm. I'm saying this to head off corrections, because again, we're talking about late 90s Pokemon. I mm-hmm. think they eventually ended up doing the equivalent of advantage for some things, like flip two coins and choose the one you want.
Yeah.
Which takes the chances from either, you know, 50-50 to 25-50-75.
Yeah,
which much better. Like much the better. You know, that world of difference there. Mm-hmm. There's sleep. This always procs mm-hmm. and stops the Pokemon from attacking or retreating, but they get to check for a cure between turns.
Yes.
So you put them to sleep. They might wake up before their turn. Mm-hmm. So it's basically just a coin flip.
Yeah. The upside, in addition to this always hitting, is that there's a potential for hitting somebody and having them stay asleep for multiple turns if they get a bad yes. break on the flips.
Yep.
Whereas paralysis is just one turn, right? Confusion is pretty devastating as well. You generally want to pull somebody out. You cure status effects by either evolving a Pokemon or pulling them from the bench, like confusion
card.
Yeah, or a trainer card. Yeah. But confusion is one where it's like you really don't want this around, because unlike poison, if you fail at this, so every time you act, you flip a coin. If it fails, it takes away your action. So you fail the attack or whatever, and you take 20 damage.
Which, depending on the Pokemon, can be pretty devastating.
Yes.
Yeah. Once it does damage to you, it goes away.
Okay. Yes.
So it's like a delayed attack. And a lot of these take a coin flip to proc.
Mm-hmm.
It's not automatic like sleep. So really, you have a 25% chance of doing that damage
mm-hmm.
To your opponent in the first place. It's bad when it happens, but it's not likely to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's supposed to be balanced by damage. But it's totally unbalanced by how reliable poison is.
Yes.
Which will do 20 damage before it gets to before your next turn anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Guaranteed.
Yeah.
So there are types in this, just like the Game Boy games, or like I keep wanting to say Pokemon in real life to refer to the great Pokemon in every medium.
It was
just like the Mr. Mime that runs the corner store, the real normie type. It's a real normie psychic.
A Mr. Mime corner store clerk would really save a lot of money on bulletproof glass.
Yeah. He does reflect,
mm-hmm.
you know, except he would mime whoever was in front of him. Oh, that'd be a Ditto store clerk.
Mm, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. A different creepy Pokemon.
Yes.
No, in the notes I had to say, like, I kept on saying like, oh, just like Pokemon the game. And then a little voice in my head was like, oh, so you're saying the card game isn't a game, Cole?
Yeah. Like this is all. And like, this isn't a game. You know? So they Pokemon have a ludicrous number of elemental types. It's a very complicated rock, paper, scissors,
mm-hmm.
Generally, strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
That carries over here with a simplification.
Yes.
So each Pokemon will say what it's weak to, so it takes double damage, or what it's resistant to, which it will take 30 damage less from
mm-hmm.
it. Yeah. And the type of attack is determined by the Pokemon's type, not the type of energy. There aren't very many multi-class Pokemon in this that have multiple types, but there are some,
mm-hmm.
you know, like a Psyduck has a psychic attack and a water attack. Psyduck is a water type Pokemon, however.
Right. Execute has a psychic attack, but is a plant type Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
And is incredibly OP.
Mm-hmm. Oh god,
execute and executor is one of my favorite like deck types you can make in this.
Oh yeah. You know your attack is based on the Pokemon's type. Your subtype is often indicated by like what its weakness is. You will have a colorless Pokemon, which encompasses like, you know, both your normal type and your bird type. A normal type will be weak to fighting, whereas the bird will be weak to lightning, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And that's kind of how they differentiate that and put that in there. So you can't always tell what something is going to be weak to or resistant to based on its overall type. You have to look down and see specifically what it is.
Because they greatly simplified it. to six types as opposed to the nearly infinity of modern Pokemon. You know, and so this works, you know, we talked about that with normal type. This is, you know, grass type is lots of things. Grass type is bug type. Grass type is poison type as well. In what universe amok has anything to do with grass, but here we are.
Right. And later on, like later, they would add like more types. So they added dark type, which encompasses your poison types and your ghost, I think. They added in like you know, metal and dragon and like fairy type as well to give a little bit more differentiation. Yes,
yeah, a more complicated rock paper scissors. In this one, ghosts are just psychic.
Yes,
in this one. So the in the trading card game, this generally determines what kind of energy you're likely to need for your attacks as well. So like, let's say you have a you know, I don't know, a Pikachu. It might have a easy attack that takes any kind, like a colorless energy. It takes one of anything. So you can use any type of energy card. But then it has Thunder Shock, which takes two thunder, two lightning energy. So you have to put two lightning energy on it to do it. These are backwards compatible, I guess. So like having the two lightning counts as having anything below it as well. You can then do anything on that card.
Yes. Yeah. The advantage, you know, your weaker attack will be colorless. And that just means that you're more likely to have any kind of energy to play if you need to get that guy out there and attacking sooner, you know, after one round instead of after two. Right.
Yes. Being able to have that versatility, there are also double energy cards. You know, a largely colorless deck in this is a really viable strategy.
Yes.
Typically, I did one color, but mostly colorless, and that's how I got through the first half of the game. You know, pretty no problem.
Yeah. So we already talked about the way that things are, you know, kind of combined at some points. We're going to talk about the different types. And I think that, you know, in addition to saying like what these specialize in, we can like talk about like whether or not when we played the Game Boy game, like which of these we tended to lean on and like what our strategy was too.
Yeah. It's worth noting when we get into the game that you do kind of start out with an archetype. And the kind of cards you're going to have depend largely on your luck, you know, as you get new packs and such. So that's also going to determine and kind of shape what you do. You know, each deck has a rare in it, and those tend to be more powerful. You can shape your deck around your rares.
Yes.
Yeah. In this grass type, which is grass, poison, and bug, generally, and these guys generally inflict poison and paralysis is kind of their move. They also sometimes get vampiric attacks, like draining attacks.
I love grass type, like it just incredibly powerful. A lot of the basic grass type enemies or a lot of the basic grass type cards like have a very low cost. They end up as they evolve getting a lot of HP on them as well. Just a really reliable type for this, especially like if you ended up running bugs. Like I don't really care for bug type Pokemon in the video games, but here like Butterfree will completely ruin everything.
Yeah. Well, they also have you want when you're this gets into deck composition, but it's worth mentioning here with these guys. You want some Pokemon that don't evolve or don't rely on being evolved to be powerful.
Yes. Yeah.
And grass type gives you Pinsir and Scyther. Right off the bat, which are both very, very powerful and don't evolve. They start out, they're tanks, you know, they have a lot of HP. They can come right out the gate fighting. So grass is very strong. You can also do very degenerate lockdown mechanics with paralysis and draining life.
You throw a Caterpie out there and you're done, you know, at least for a while. Like that is a good early game strategy. Load up with Caterpies and then put them out there, string shot. Hope they stay paralyzed while you're building up something powerful on your bench.
The kind of delay, you know, while you build your board. Fire type Pokemon. These don't have subtypes. It's just fire type Pokemon generally. And these are balanced around doing a lot of damage but having to discard energy. So you do, you know, above rate damage, and you have kind of above rate stats on a lot of the cards, but you are setting back your mana base, basically your energy base, you know, borrowing from tomorrow,
yes,
so to speak.
yeah This is in addition to like fire attacks. I found that even basic fire Pokemon, you know, with as rare as they relatively rare as they ended up being, like in order to do like their their basic attack, it would require at least two, at least two, you know, higher energy costs around on fire.
Yep.
Never had a lot of success with these guys.
Yeah, more damage. I just didn't get a lot of them.
No,
so I didn't. It's the one group I just barely used.
Yeah.
Out of all of them. Water Pokemon. This includes water and ice Pokemon here. And these are generally kind of middle of the road. They also do a lot of paralysis, but they have kind of a sub theme of caring about how many energy cards you have above and beyond the requirement.
Yeah.
As well as there's kind of like what would be called in Magic a signpost card.
Yeah.
Like one card that explains the archetype, basically. And the three, you know, your Bulbasaur, Charmander, and Blastoise, you know, mm-hmm. here, Squirtle, do that here. And the way that Blastoise works is he lets you play as many water cards as you want.
Yeah.
You know, down on your guy. And you can do this because you'll do extra damage
yeah.
if you do more. Water Pokemon are good mm-hmm. In this. Seal and Dewdong
yeah.
have a lot of HP.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really good. Yeah, these tend to be good.
Yeah. Horsey is really good because of the smoke screen. Basically, yeah. it's just like a paralyze that always hits, essentially.
Yeah.
Yep, yeah. It's water type is pretty good. Like the ceiling on those is pretty high. It's like a higher ceiling grass type that doesn't rely as much on status effects.
Yes. Lightning type Pokemon are just lightning type, which makes sense. There's not a lot of things that overlap with lightning.
Mm-hmm.
The idea here is that they do, there's kind of a couple sub themes to this.
Yeah.
One is high damage for the energy cost, but with a risk of the Pokemon damaging themselves or doing a negative status effect to themselves, with a sub theme of being able to damage the bench.
Yeah.
There are Pokemon that have self-destruct, which will hurt bench Pokemon and do a lot of damage. There are also Pokemon that can just attack the bench directly
mm-hmm.
from here. And that's really a bad time. You can't. It's harder to respond to that. And killing benched Pokemon gets you prizes just the same.
Yeah, still counts.
You know, you're kind of bypassing your opponent's defense, you know, mm-hmm. what they're thinking of as their defense. They can still use trainer cards and such.
Yeah.
On the bench, but a lot of these are really efficient in exchange for doing damage to an enemy that's not fighting you right this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Had some luck with lightning here in this run through, but it was really for specialized kind of situations.
Yeah.
Psychic is incredibly overpowered.
Oh, yeah.
good Lord. This is Psychic and Ghost Pokemon. There's some Poison and Fairy thrown in kind of at the margins there. Like the status effect that they specialize in is Sleep, which is mm-hmm. fine. You know, you have like the whole Ghastly line, which has certain effects that only happen when the enemy Pokemon is asleep. But where they really shine is in weird rules for manipulating incoming and outgoing damage. So like yeah. this is the type that has the Meditate attack, which does a base amount of damage plus bonus damage for however many damage markers are on that that enemy in the first place. So like the first attack will do 10, the second attack will do 20, you know, and then on and on
40 and on and on.
Yeah.
There's also, this is where Gengar is, and Gengar is great in mm-hmm. this. Has a move where once per move you can just move damage.
Mm-hmm.
From one character to another, you can knock out.
Oh, that's a Alakazam that has.
Oh, Alakazam's got that.
Yes,
yeah.
Gengar. I've got my little Gengar toy.
Oh,
success! Hey. Tongue when you press him down.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the Alakazam Pokemon power is phenomenal.
Yes,
in this, the kind of balances this is that it's like mutually assured destruction.
Yeah,
psychic cards are weak to other psychic cards,
mm-hmm.
so to counter them. You know, having some cheap psychics. They're also tend not to be, the other thing that's kind of with this is that their first evolutions tend to be very weak.
Extremely fragile. I think Abra only has 30 HP.
Yeah, Abra only has 30 HP. Ghastly only has mm-hmm. 30 HP. You know, Drowsy is 40. Like they barely have HP. Like you have to get them evolved. That's kind of their other sub theme.
Yeah.
Fighting. So this counts as fighting, rock, and ground type Pokemon. The theme that I see in this is high base damage for low energy.
And high defense.
There are a lot of characters that can do 20 damage on one energy, which is above rate. Typically, you're spending, you know, one for one up until a certain point. They can kind of jump that curve.
Also, they tend to be outside of some normal Pokemon, some of the most expensive to retreat as well.
They're slow. And they also don't tend to use status effects.
Primarily about damage.
Just kind of direct damage and kind of aggro, you know, the equivalent of red in Magic. There are exceptions to all of these things as well.
Yes.
You know, there's like Earthquake and stuff. There are attacks that, that do damage to your own Pokemon. Like there's crossover in all these things. We're talking about general themes.
And the one that you would be a fool to ignore is colorless. You want to have these in your deck usually. These primarily cover like normal and flying type, but in these early versions you get like dragon and fairy types written in on this as well.
There's no fairies at this time. But like what things would later become, you know, this is where Clefairy is.
And this has the most Pokemon whose abilities rely on coin flips to do damage. It also has some of the highest HP counts. Boy, if you want to build a stall deck, like this and Psychic are the way to go.
There's nothing better than throwing a Snorlax out there who cannot be the subject of a status effect and can just hang out and tank stuff. Or Kangaskhan, which can draw you cards until it can attack.
Chansey.
Chansey, very, very powerful, who can just sit there and absorb.
Picture me as a 12-year-old just figuring out a stall deck at this comic shop and almost getting like a 25-year-old to punch me.
It's the poor balance and play design of this early set is just full of degenerate, infuriating strategies. And that's part of the reason why I love this video game so much, is because like, what do I care about honor to a computer? You know, I'm gonna take all your energy. I have eight energy removal cards and I'm running Lapras. Like you're not getting anything. You can't do anything. Fucked. It's funny thinking about this from a trading card perspective, because Magic had the same thing. Like there's Stasis decks, which was the early Magic combo thing, were the same thing. Like there are Magic control decks, which are basically stall decks, that were much more powerful and much more annoying in the early game as a thing. So these are very versatile, and you can slot them in anywhere. That's important, not just from a strategy perspective, but also from a you need 60 cards perspective. It's very likely early on in the video game you are not going to have enough of any two colors really to make up a strong deck. You'll have to throw in some of these guys, and some of them are jobbers, you know. Some of them are not that interesting, but they there are really, really powerful cards in this zone.
There's worse than you, there's worse things you can do than throw in a Spearow, right? So we've alluded to deck composition a couple of times. I think this is pretty important, especially as we talk about differentiating this from a deck builder as well.
It's the game.
Yes.
Like this is the fun part of the video game, and to me, the fun part of the actual tabletop game as well. You know, choosing your Pokemon, taking the high level strategy of the chances of what, you know, you're going to pick, and figuring out a composition where you have a good chance of having a nice little like curve out. Of drawing the right things to constantly be doing things. You know, you have abilities and types to complement one another. You have the right cards, the right proportions. You're never energy starved or energy flooded. You have enough utility, things like that.
And this is something you can look up. Like you can, you know, find decks even in the game. You have the ability to like do an auto deck kind of thing. But
the
a lot
AI
of this
is so bad for that.
It's really bad.
They will make you an absolutely dog dick deck. The auto deck is just and the ones where you can go and use the champions decks and stuff, I'm like, oh, the one that I beat really easily, that thing sucked. Like, you know,
put up that image of the, you know, where the planes came back and like where they got hit, you know, kind of deal. But like this is, you know, this is primarily something that you're going to you know, hone through experimentation. And also, like, I don't know about you, I didn't have like an awful, I didn't have, hey, this is my fire deck, this is my X, Y, and Z deck. I didn't make a bunch of them. I just modified whatever I had.
Well, there are some ease of use things that I think that would make this game a lot better. And one of which would be allowing a card to be in multiple decks.
Yeah.
You know, which you can't do physically, but you could just align the process of reconfiguring. So that's what I did as well. But I would have liked to have had different decks set up if they would allow them to overlap.
Yes.
Seems like an easy change to make.
Yeah.
Similar to the video game, or the Pokemon in general, type weakness and type advantage is huge in this. Again, to its detriment.
Yeah.
You know, this video game is not particularly rigorous. It is fun. It's very expressive, but it's not very hard. And the reason it's not very hard is because you're going up against grass Pokemon and you just make a fire deck. The game tells you to do this and you do it and you'll win.
They really shouldn't advertise on the building what kind of decks you're going to fight in there.
It really shouldn't. The whole, and this is a problem in Pokemon too.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and when you're playing the game, you know, we talk about being reduced to an algorithm, right? Like, you just know, like, I just throw the weakness at it. You know, and it's the reason why when you play a Pokemon video game, your Charizard can basically solo the first like four dungeons.
Yeah.
Or first four gyms. Like, it is a bummer. I don't think it's particularly good game design. It doesn't happen in the physical game very often because you have to be, you're not going to say like, oh, what kind of deck are you playing? And they're going to say grass and you're like, and then pull out your weakness. That's no fun. You have to try to build something that covers your weaknesses.
Yes.
Not so in the video game.
No. No. You can correct me if I'm wrong on this one, because it sounds like you took a different strategy. For me, I generally rolled a two type deck with some colorless Pokemon thrown in to shore up any weaknesses that were there. Changed one of the types that was in there depending on what I was going up against. And there are a couple of different reasons to do this, but I want to hear like what your strategy was for like composing the types in your deck.
If I found something I liked, I had inertia and did not want to fiddle, unless I had to, or I got something new and exciting to play with. I did one color plus colorless in the video game, which I don't think is a sound strategy at the actual table for a card game, but for the video game, it worked for me. And I would switch my main color based on either an exciting thing I wanted to try or a weakness if there was a guy I was trying to get past who was tough. And the reason I did that was to make energy type not matter. Basically, I had a lot of colored energy and then those doubled colorless. And basically, I could put that colored energy on anything.
Yes. Yeah.
So,
You don't want to have too many different types of Pokemon, and thus rely on too many different kinds of energy, just because you need that balance to be right. You know, like if you have a whole bunch of types of Pokemon, or don't have enough energy in your deck, you're less likely to have the right kind of energy to do the kind of attack that you need. So like you're already, limited to a growth rate. You're throwing out one, energy per round. Right. Well, if I don't have anything I can throw out that is useful this round,
you're not developing your board.
I'm behind the curve. Yeah.
Yep. And you want to, part of deck composition is keeping yourself on that curve.
Yes.
Through that. There are also trainer cards that influence this. Energy source cards, which you pull up any energy, what would be called in Magic color fixing. You can do that in this as well, which makes it more viable to have a splash color. You just want to play this one character that has a little bit of colored power that's necessary, powered energy, or if you want to do a two color plus colorless, energy search will be your friend.
Yes.
You know, since there's no cost to play those, they just replace themselves. It makes your deck smaller, which is good because of consistency.
Yeah. When you're like selecting your Pokemon that you want to use, like that you're throwing in your deck, the basic Pokemon are great, especially ones that are, that don't evolve, that just come pre-baked.
They're
as their
strong,
best form.
Yeah. Strong from the start.
Yeah.
There's kind of a ratio for this.
Yes.
You want to have a certain number of basic Pokemon, and the way that I did it was 4-2-1.
Yeah.
Basically, so four of the first stage, two of the second stage, one of the third stage, with several cards that allowed me to search up cards that I needed. So I could always kind of use those as wild cards. You don't want to get stuck with a handful of Gengars without a Haunter or a Ghastly.
And when you're choosing those Pokemon, like which ones you want to rely on, you want to make sure that you are not falling into the Zapdos trap in this.
Yes.
you yes. know, where it's like, hey, God, I've got this extremely powerful card with an attack that will one-shot anything. However, it needs four lightning energy to go, which means at minimum it's four rounds until he can do anything. And if he's out there, inactive, if he's all that I have, that is four rounds, yes, where he is taking damage and he is going to die.
Well, and if you're playing against degenerate Gary Butterfield, who is just using energy removal, so you will never get to that.
No.
That is the balance factor for very powerful cards from the start. They make the legendary birds in this
kind of
dog shit. Yeah. And they're big prizes you're meant to get in this video game, but they're not very powerful.
Yeah.
So you want to be able to do things at a good mix of early and late game, early development, late development, for sure.
Yes.
Good starters can kind of keep your opponent busy or chip damage while you develop your board. So for example, you have your basic Pokemon, it can do something effective for one energy, and then you can start queuing up your next Pokemon who is more powerful and needs more energy. So you can either keep that other Pokemon busy or just kind of tank for a little bit while you're building your board.
Yeah. Understanding that the time that you are buying also works for your opponent as well.
Yes.
Right. So that works kind of both ways. And then trainer cards are super important, you know, especially as we talked about, you can use as many of them in a round as you want. It's extremely bad.
Absolutely amazing that got out of, like, somebody designed a video, like a game where you can do that. No resource cost at all.
Yeah. There are some that are good for any deck, you know, if you're just looking to backfill something in, like, never going to, you know, turn my nose up at a potion, I guess. There are like a lot of them that seem really good, but do have a bit of a downside. So like there's Bill and then there's Professor Oak. So Bill lets you draw two cards immediately. And Professor Oak lets you discard your hand, however many cards you have in it, to draw seven more, to kind of like cycle through. Like those are pretty cool. However, if you're going up against something that is trying to deck you out, playing those speeds that up.
Yeah. You have to build your deck I use four of those, each of those in both my deck. Like I use those with Reckless Abandon because I was trying to get to energy removal to stop my opponent from doing stuff.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, you can make that work. You do have to be worried about decking yourself out.
Yes.
With the final battle with my rival, in the video game, I killed them with zero cards remaining. I drew my last card and I would have died on the next round.
Holy shit.
Super fun. Just like, holy shit. Cause I was just, you know, again, just drawing deeper and deeper into my deck to get stuff. If you are running an energy intensive deck or a deck with lots of colors, you want to have trainer cards that can pull energy, since these are basically wild cards. You also, when a Pokemon gets knocked out, the energy cards go into the graveyard.
Yes.
You can then pull those out with energy recovery cards.
Yes.
Those are things that kind of ensure you for the long game.
The graphic on the recycle card is so fucking funny.
It's they're all pretty good. There's an insane amount of dorkiness to these, and the fact that they're translated into a Game Boy Color art style, and this is true for the Pokemon as well. There are ones that like look great. That's a great looking Pokemon, and then you get to whatever they are doing with Jinx, which has a color scheme that I cannot understand. It looks like it's kind of negative, like or something. there's some amazingly ugly cards in this.
Oh gosh, there are offensive trainer cards that can be pretty useful here, especially like as Gary has alluded to, for like an energy manipulation. You know, you can, you know, there are like even abilities that let you manipulate your opponent's hand as well. Again, talking about dorky graphics, the imposter Professor Oak, which
I love imposter Professor Oak so much. it reminds you of the 2011 Muppets movie with like the Moops or whatever, the like the cool badass gangster like gang Muppets who smoke. It's very funny. This stuff is great. There's not you'll never directly do status. And there's no direct damage. I'm saying that for Magic fans. Those would be things you'd be able to do in Magic. You cannot do it here. All things flow through a Pokemon.
Yes. And kind of the final type here, which is a bit of an edge case, is the strange fossil. So like in the Pokemon Game Boy game and the RPG, you know, you would get these fossils that would turn into like an Omanyte or a Kabuto, right? And you would have to take them there. Yeah, Aerodactyl. And you would take, you know, take that to a place and they would turn it into a Pokemon. Here, the version of that is like you cannot just play an Aerodactyl or any of those. They have to evolve from a strange fossil, which is like a trainer card / basic Pokemon that will sit on your bench and then you evolve out of it.
Yeah, I didn't fuck with this. I'm sure it's fine, but I just...
Aerodactyl is really powerful, like stupid powerful, actually, because of the it's a Pokemon ability, which stops all evolution. Pokemon from evolving. Yeah. Yeah.
Prehistoric power.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just didn't want to do the overhead with it. Yeah. It didn't make sense for my deck, but it's a viable build, you know, that this game not being incredibly rigorous, but being very full on player expression. You know, so if you want to make that work, you certainly can.
Yeah.
This is complicated when you're doing deck composition by the fact that when you put your prize cards out, you may put something you really need.
Yeah.
So if you have an individual card, like if you're relying on a single Aerodactyl you have, you don't want to do that. That might end up being a prize card and you won't get it until the end. This kind of reinforces general trading card and deck builder game card rules as well, where having multiple consistency is very important.
Yes.
Having multiple copies of important things, having cards that tutor up individual cards you need that basically count as an extra copy of that, are very important.
Yeah.
Consistency.
So let's talk about the video game, get into its development and kind of like the general structure of this, because it actually is a very strange product that I could see turning a lot of people off, but it was kind of exactly what I wanted.
It was totally my shit. It's not necessarily, you know, it was just my shit.
Yeah.
So it's a hard game to talk about how good it is, because again, I think that there are bad balance things and you can just make a deck that attacks the type weakness of everyone you're fighting and just steamroll the entire game.
Yeah.
It's just like very, very fun to play.
Yeah.
Like it's exactly my shit, and I'm like raising it 2 letter grades. You know, I apologize for no bias. You know. So this was led by Hudson Soft, as we mentioned, with Creatures being involved early on for planning and support. I love that developer name.
Creatures. Yeah. And it was directed by Koji Arai. From Hudson, this was their first time directing a game's development. Not a huge like history prior to this for that guy.
Yeah. You play as a kid who lives on one of the world's most specific continents, and your goal is to beat the card collectors at the Pokemon Dome and inherit the legendary Pokemon cards. It cannot be stressed enough. No one lives on this island.
Nope.
You cannot get food. You cannot use the bathroom. You cannot buy a DVD.
You don't even have a house. Like, at least in Pokemon, you have a hometown and like a mom.
You are born in the lab. As far as I know, you are a MODOK, but with a C at the end. it's your design entirely.
Gary, do you think that Pokemon exist in this world?
That's a great question. I think no.
Okay.
Because they would have to show up, right?
I mean, at least in the RPGs, like you see a Machamp like flattening the ground for a construction site, right?
Oh yeah, like in the later ones, there's like just a bunch of Machamps like weightlifting, and it's like deeply uncomfortable.
How am I like, supposed to compete with that?
Well, it's just like, what? Where are you, a guy? Do I talk to you? Like, what is this? In this world, I think this is supposed to be our world, basically.
Yeah,
because they reference the Pokemon trading card game so much, but just on this weird prison island where that's all you can do. It's like Pokemon cards are currency, but you can't trade them for food. You can only trade them for other Pokemon cards. And everyone's on a 3-day clock before they all die of thirst. You know, like licking a Squirtle card, desperately trying to get moisture from it.
I would boil this for soup, but there's no water.
There's nothing to do. It's just seawater.
No. Oh my gosh. So you want those legendary Pokemon cards because you got to be the best, right? Yeah. To do this, you've got to go around and beat the leaders of these 8 Pokemon card clubs, themed around different kinds of Pokemon, and get their badge. When you get all the badges, you can go and do battle with the 4 legendary trainers, getting you beat them, then you defeat your rival, because of course you have a rival. His name is Ronald or Roger, I forget.
It's Ronald.
And then you get the cards, and then you're bummed out because they're actually not very good.
Yep. And these guys, you do fight them as a gauntlet in a crucible. And you fight them back to back. Mm-hmm. So you play from the top down perspective, navigating the world like Pokemon. Mm-hmm. But there's almost no story. The world is basically a menu. You go into these clubhouses, which all have the same layout, unnecessary foyer, a like hangout room, and then the room where the trainer, like the club members are, and the main trainer is.
Mm-hmm. And everybody that you talk to is either somebody that that fights you, or they just exist to be a pro tip.
Yes. What it is. There are a couple of very minor things, like there are people who trade.
Yeah, yeah.
Pokemon, things like that to get rare Pokemon. We'll talk about that in the game. Mm-hmm. My first time I played this when I was younger, I was obsessive about getting, collecting them all, getting the full set. This time, who has time for that? You generally do that up at like a Pokemon promotional zone. Mm-hmm. You do the Pokemon Bowl that you can pop up at.
Yeah.
So you're born in a lab. The beginning of the game, your mentor, Professor Mason, lets you choose between 3 starter decks, Charmander and Friends, Squirtle and Friends, or Bulbasaur and Friends. And Friends is very loose here. Mm-hmm. These are sloppily, shittily constructed decks.
They're very bad. You want to get out of these immediately.
Immediately. And when you beat someone in a duel, they reward you with 2 booster packs. These have 10 cards. These are from the 3 different sets here: Colosseum, Evolution, and Laboratory, and Fossil. The 4 sets. And then they have 1 rare, and the rest of them are common, essentially. So there's 1 kind of marquee card at the top. The rest of them are deck fillers.
Mm-hmm.
And you use these to grow your collection to build your deck.
Yeah. Importantly, there is a trainer in Dr. Mason's lab over in the auto deck room, server X, who will reward you with a booster deck that contains nothing but energy cards. This, I think, is a necessary pressure release valve, especially if you're looking to get into another deck. Otherwise, you are just getting, here's a chance that I get, ooh, 1 more fire energy. Cool.
Yeah.
I can't build a fire deck yet because I only have 5.
It's a necessary pressure release valve, but it's a bad solution when just giving you unlimited energy would have been a better solution.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those things where it's this is old school in a way that has gone out of style.
Yes.
Making you earn your lands. Nobody does this.
No.
You just get energies because they're free. They're junks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you make your own decks as you acquire your cards. You can also use the badges from the club leaders to activate the auto deck machine. If you have the right cards, it will make somebody you beat's deck. If you're maybe a fan, maybe this is kind of cool, or you're like role playing or something. I cannot imagine
in
a million years doing that. And it's also taking away the main part that's fun of this. Like, if I'm not making my own deck, why am I playing this?
Yeah.
I understand that everybody wants to do expressive play, but like, it feels like the central mechanic of the game.
Yeah. To me. I can make up in my mind a person who just wants the challenge of playing with one of these incredibly specialized decks, right? Yeah. Like to learn the marquee card or mechanic that it's built around, right? For me, that's I have that inertia too. It's like, I don't know, man, Butterfree's pretty good. I can probably just build a deck that works around that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's also, and doing one of those things, if you're trying to role play as one of these substandard decks, like that's all well and good until you're the grass deck and you go up against the fire gym. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, now I can't, because that's just the Pokemon subset. Importantly, there's no penalty to losing to a trainer, that you don't lose anything, which is why I've said this before. If you're playing this on emulator, which you are, throw a save state at the beginning of every match so you can concede.
Yes.
You know, if it's not going your way, if you're getting a shitty draw, if you are just, you've accidentally walked into a duel with somebody who you did not know their alignment and they're just designed to destroy your deck, reload. There's no reason to go down with the ship. It just takes a lot of time.
Yes. Even if you, I mean, when you fire this up, go into the settings, turn off battle animations, and maximize the message speed.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. You want this to happen as fast as it possibly can. The animations will kill you. They're slow.
And it's not additive, really.
So. Not additive at all, even a little bit. Like your characters don't animate. You don't get to see Pikachu do a cool thing.
No.
You know, you get to see Pikachu kind of flash a little bit to the same piece of music you've been listening to for the whole game. Occasionally you battle your rival Ronald. After you beat a club leader, he shows up, and winning against him will get you rare promotional cards.
Right.
Other you than can also trading for them. Yes. You know, which we mentioned before, this is probably a fine place to put it, I guess, suppose. Somebody will be like, I'm looking for a Lapras, I have my level 28 Moltres. Magmar. And your Magmar is level 34, so you know it's a slightly different Magmar. Yes. Slightly different moves, slightly different HP, stuff like that. This is also how you get a lot of cross moves. This is how you get things like Surfing Pikachu, which has the abilities of a Pikachu, but also has a water attack.
Right.
Things like that.
Yeah. Just kind of these weird little corner cases, like a lot of them, like when we say promotional, like these were some cards that were like only handed out, you know, at particular, like, you know, the Pokemon movie launch. Right.
Yes. Things like that. Yeah. There's also cards in this. I don't know where else to put this. They're specific to the Game Boy version of this. They have a big GB on them. This means that they deal with randomization in a way that you could not do. At the table. So these were built directly for this game.
They were built directly for this game, sometimes to replace cards that were impossible to implement in the digital version of the game. So like, hey, this, you know, that this Ditto wouldn't work, so let's replace it with one that is kind of specialized for the Game Boy.
The other way you're going to get special cards is through Card Pop, which is a link cable thing where you, the mere fact that you call it that tells me you're not ready.
Now, Card Pop was a bad dude.
Yeah. you hook your Game Boy up to somebody else's, then you go, and then you both get a new card.
Yeah. And you can only do it once per person. Yeah.
Yep. And then you can also, there's the Pokemon Bowl, which you can go up there and fight a special battle to get a special card.
Yes.
It happens twice per campaign. You can miss it. Again, my collection, you know, my completionist younger version cared about this. My older version could not care less. I did this once to do it, but I wasn't going to keep an eye on it.
Talking about the aesthetics, this is an incredibly sparse game. Like when you're outside of a match, and even when you're in a match, we'll talk about the win here. But like, it's like a downgraded version of Gen 1. You know, see the cheapness of each of the buildings being exactly the same. Right.
Yeah. It's functional. The whole it's basically is a menu, but it could have literally been a menu and it'd been fine.
Yeah.
You know, they wanted to draw in people who liked the Pokemon mainline games a little bit.
Yeah.
So I think it's emulating those to a degree, even though it's doing it poorly.
Right. The thing that they've spent the most time on, it seems, is digitizing all of the card art for the individual Pokemon cards. See us talking about how dorky they are. Like, I don't know, I could go and pull out any of these cards that I have and be like, oh yeah, no, that's the art. That's the pose. You know, it's just lower resolution and with a more limited color palette. Like these are the cards.
Yeah. Yeah. They are easily recognizable.
Yeah.
You know. For such. The music only has three songs. These are catchy, but I got pretty sick of them.
Oh yeah, no, this immediately became a podcast game.
Yeah. And you also, you're not engaging the part of your brain that deals with words. Like, this is great for a podcast. You know, it's almost a perfect podcast game. Like, this is the level I want to be busy, you know, while listening to information. I'm engaging two parts of my brain pretty fully. Much like, the songs are catchy, but there's only three of them.
Yeah. the baseline on the main battle section.
Yes.
Yeah, the main really battle nice. Song.
Yeah. So when we go through this, we're not going to talk about each trainer that you fight. That'd be dumb. We're going to talk about specific gimmicks and then just kind of the general stees of the clubs, but most the body of the episode has happened. You know, knowing about these kind of strategies, that is the game. Figuring out this kind of thing. And in a general sense, as I mentioned, I went largely energy removal as a strategy. Worth talking about, like, kind of what, how we approach this.
Yeah.
So, you know, because that's the, if that's the central mechanic. Quickly got as many draw cards and energy removal cards as I could, and then relied on Lapras and the second level Dragonite, both of which have skills that do energy removal.
Yeah.
So my whole goal was to stop my enemy from doing anything, and it was wildly successful for the entire game. I did, you know, I changed out for type weaknesses largely out of convenience and to avoid monotony. You know, and just try out some new cards. Like, oh, I'd get a new, you know, this guy looks cool. You know, Executor is really fun.
This,
you know, as a card. So it's worth fucking around with that. But generally, that is the strategy I used. Aggressively dig through my deck to deny my opponent energy while hitting them.
Yeah. Primarily for me, I was pretty degenerate with status effects, playing as grass type. So paralysis, a little bit of confusion or sleep, again, having, and I never really relied on Executor, but like even just execute was pretty good.
Yeah,
and really execute good. is a really good bridge into just like a grass psychic deck. Is you know, is generally just fine. I denied my enemy turns that way, as I built up either toward like Butterfree or oh gosh, Venusaur. Even Ivysaur is really good because so Venusaur is great because you can move grass energy around. So any grass energy that you have played, you can just move it at will, even between bench Pokemon and the Venusaur. Even if you do not end up getting your getting Venusaur, Ivysaur, you know, it's high energy. You've got to have three grass on it, but it has a poison attack that does 20 damage as a base. And then remember, by the time you move next, they're going to take another 20. You know, so
it's
they
like
may only
toxic.
Have. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's one of those. So I started with Bulbasaur and friends. That with Scyther. Was my initial kind of plan until I developed the rest of my board.
Yeah.
For that. That ended up being very powerful as well.
Yeah, of course, Scyther. I also just for old time's sake made a Haymaker deck, you know, Electabuzz and Hitmonchan, Scyther, stuff like that. maximizing early round damage output in order to like maybe just, you know, beat them in two rounds, possibly.
Yeah, beat them before they can get anybody out.
Yeah.
So much of this is reliant on luck of the draw.
Yeah.
There are a lot of fights you will win dishonorably. The enemy will get one Pokemon out and won't get any energy for it.
Yeah.
And then you'll just take out that Pokemon and win in a decision right away. It can happen to you if you're bad at developing your deck.
Yes.
As well. That was generally it. It's worth thinking about, too, how much your strategy was shaped on the rares you get.
Yeah.
When I played this when I was young, I remember using Butterfree a lot. I didn't get a Butterfree this go round. So I didn't end up using him. Same thing with a Venomoth. Like, I didn't get one.
Yeah.
Which I remember that also being really good for poison and paralysis.
I just I had this bug deck, you know, that I played. Never used a Beedrill because I didn't get one. Despite the fact that Beedrill is really good.
Those kind of things will happen.
Yeah.
The other kind of half of my general strategy to get it out here was to have load up with Snorlaxes and Kangaskhans. Until I could get my energy removal characters. So Kangaskhan, I think, is the strongest individual Pokemon you can put out first.
Yeah.
Has tons of health and has a one energy draw a card attack. And then if you get him to four energy, does four coin flips and does 20 times the damage of heads.
Ridiculous. Get,
which is really good. It can totally whiff. It's unlikely, but it can happen. It's like 12% of the time. But it generally is really powerful. But the whole time he's just tanking, you're drawing twice as many cards as your opponent. That is nuts.
Yeah.
Like in any kind of, you know, game design thing, you know, that is an insane amount of card advantage.
That would have been softened. Yeah.
Yes. I'm sure that kind of thing has been patched out of this.
Yeah.
But that ended up being, and then Snorlax is just really good Mm-hmm. He cannot take status effects, and then he has a 30 damage paralysis attack.
Yeah,
that he can do.
I mean, and these big early tanks, Snorlax, Kangaskhan, Chansey, like all of them have incredibly high retreat costs, right? Yes. So like you can develop your, you know, you can develop your bench as much as you want, but like there'll be a cost associated with pulling this thing back. It could be too good at living.
Yeah. It's too good at living, or you can sacrifice it, you know, and just have a fully developed bench. Like by the time it dies, you can then throw five, you know, perfect Pokemon at your opponent, or you can shore that up with trainer cards. There's a trainer card called Switch that will switch your Pokemon without paying the cost.
Yes.
So that was in the general strategy I used. I don't remember down to the individual gym when I traded things out.
No.
Like that. Like that's, you know, that's a level of detail that I can't really do. Mm-hmm. But.
And it's also worth talking about. So like it's the campaign, quote unquote, in this is not like Pokemon where you're doing a circuit around a world map. And you're doing the gyms in order. In this, you can go to whatever gym you want. You don't even have to complete the gym before you start the next one. So like the early game is probably going to be like you going around and looking for the easiest person to beat in a few gyms so that you can beat them quickly a couple of times and get the boosters that they serve up so you can build up whatever you need to. Right.
And Professor Mason sends you an email after every time when you meet a gym leader and then after you beat them, I believe, with cards attached to it.
Yeah,
it's with bullshit. Like, you know, be sure to drink your Ovaltine. Here's some decks, but you need to be doing this to build up a card base.
Yeah,
so it's one of those games where the early game you have some privation and it's a little bit difficult, and then you steamroll it once you get to like a critical mass. Let's talk about the Water Club, which we both started with because we were both Bulbasaur and friends.
Yeah. So this is a club of people lazing around a pool. You know, their leader is always asleep and there's just got a nerd who guards her. So you've got to beat everybody there before I'll let you through. Note that when you have a type club, not every deck is going to be built around that. So like here you have Amanda, who's one of the jabronis here, whose deck is built around Jigglypuffs instead. You know, I think just speaking of Misty, Water Lady had a Jigglypuff. So now we've got a Jigglypuff, right?
Yeah.
And Jigglytuff Jigglypuff is good because of sleep. You know, it can be irritating to go against because you've got all these coin flips. But it can be devastating because Jigglypuff evolves into Wigglytuff and has Do the Wave as a special attack, which gets more damage the more Pokemon are on the bench. And Amanda really loves having the Clefairy doll, which sits on the bench, and also the strange fossil, but very little to evolve it into. She's all about packing the bench.
Counts as a number. So there's a concept to the deck.
Yeah.
You know, Joshua has a deck built around Krabby. Krabby has an ability called Call for Family, which lets you pull another Krabby up out of the deck. Not super great. Good try, Joshua.
It gives me a lot of easy stuff to kill, Joshua.
Yeah, there's a couple of Pokemon that have that Call for Family ability.
Yeah,
where you just grab another one.
Yeah,
you grab another one of the same Pokemon, and it's card advantage. You know, you're drawing a card during that point, but it's still not necessarily worth using an attack on.
Yeah.
The leader Amy, which will only wake up and attack you after you've killed her minions. Has a deck based on Blastoise and the Rain Dance ability, which removes the cap on playing water energy and is coupled with Hydro Pump, which does more damage if you have more water out there. Amy never even got close to getting out Blastoise.
With a number of these, especially with the leaders, the tip that you get from Mason will be like, hey, this is probably what they're going to work toward. Kill them. Of acting like what the second I see a Squirtle, I'm not going to say, oh, that thing needs to die.
Yeah, it's got to go.
Yeah.
In real life, too. Like, I'll tell you one thing. Me and my friends would have killed Squirtle with hammers. Get the treasure out of there.
Yeah.
But you know, and you're coming at this with the grass type. Like it's not, you know, she's the most straight, just water type.
Yeah.
She has a couple other things. She plays Lapras as well. Lapras is very powerful. It comes pre-evolved.
Yeah.
Then you head to the grass club here.
Yep. It's like a greenhouse. The leader is missing. Eventually you find her up at Mr. Imazumi's house or whatever it is.
You do kind of these, sometimes you do these little quests. to get the final person to kind of make this feel a little bit more like an RPG. Mm-hmm. I honestly would love to not have these. These felt like busy work to me. It was one thing pretending to be another. To me.
But like the grass club is also a good place to come to first, even if you are grass type, because like, I don't know, there's really no detriment to running into something where like, it's not particularly weak to what you are doing, but you're not particularly weak to what it's doing.
Oh yeah.
You know, like you get these orthogonal type matches, which are not a problem at all.
Neutral matches are fine because you're not a computer.
Yeah.
And you're certainly not a computer from like 1998. You know, trying to emulate a complicated card game, so you can make better choices.
You really can.
This, you know, without without type advantage, the your opponent doesn't really have a chance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I came here and I just steamrolled Brittany over and over again because her deck is terrible. She has like I think four types in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's Ludicrous. Not going to fly, Brittany.
Yeah. I'm really curious if modern Pokemon has like, you know, multicolor, like you can do, you know, in Magic there are like five color decks you can do and they're hard to do. I wonder if Pokemon has the same thing, you know, or if it kind of tops out at three. You can also fight Heather here, who is built around Vaporeon as a counter to the fire Pokemon you probably brought. Might have brought. So Vaporeon evolving from Eevee, it's really easy to have Eevees in your deck and then have several different evolutions to kind of have a Swiss Army knife for that. And Eevee is not necessarily a joke in the first place. Like Eevee is a good Pokemon.
Yeah.
You want to kill those Pokemons quickly.
A few of like basically every one of these clubs is going to have somebody who has a deck like this where they're anticipating you walking in take advantage of the club's type weakness and then they're here to punish you for that, for like relying specifically on it. Nikki the leader is, you know, hiding up at Mr. Ishihara's house. It's like a pro tip pit. He's got a bunch of like bookcases that you can read.
He's a real nerd. I'm not looking to trade anything right now, but you can read my books if you like.
Like, what, you, all right, what man. Use are you?
Yeah. Cool. Cool. Yeah. Good work.
Yeah. And Nikki's deck is built around Exeggutor. This is going to be a good demonstration of how overpowered this thing is. Good Lord.
He's really good. You have to get him out in the first place. And he takes the way he works is he will do coin, you know, a coin flip damage per grass energy, but it's just per how many you have.
Yes.
It's similar to like a hydro pump, you know, kind of thing. You can't put as much grass energy on there, but a lot of these have an upper limit. They'll say like for every additional water energy you have attached, do 10 more damage. Don't add more than 20 damage for this.
Yeah.
Executor doesn't have that.
No.
So if you can get, you know, a series of executors, an executor deck will serve you well in this game. Pure grass and just go nuts. Next up we're gonna go to the rock club here.
It's just a quarry. Like
who's playing there? Oh, the shitty Gengars. I heard they were good. They suck. Andrew is here, who again is doing the thing where he thinks you're gonna bring grass Pokemon. So he plays Ponyta and Rapidash to kind of counter this. You know, joke's on you. I'm not playing those characters.
Nope.
You know, and then Gene, the leader, who is doing a stall deck that is infuriating, where it is Onyx and Rhyhorn. Onyx hardens and then Rhyhorn leers, which means you can't act during that.
Right.
And then while he's doing this, he's developing his bench to build a golem who has self-destruct, which will do what it says, but also kill your Pokemon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, and Golem has like what, 120 HP? Like it's as much as you can get, which means it'll do that much damage when he self-destructs. So it is just, you know, I'm taking you with me kind of deal. And then also doing a bunch of damage to your bench.
Yeah.
It's no fun.
It's not fun to play against a stall deck, generally.
No.
In terms of power creep, like in this game, 120 is the most health anything can have. When I was looking at modern Pokemon, they're all like 460.
Oh yeah, no. I pulled up and looked at like what Beedrill has, just because I wanted to see confirm that Beedrill was as good as I remembered it being, because I didn't get one. And like I'm looking at 130. What?
Yeah, it's they got real silly while we weren't looking. Heading over to the fire club here, we have John, who filters his hand a lot with Professor Oak to fill up his bench as fast as possible Man after my own heart. And then Ken, the leader, he won't face you until you have enough cards. You have to have at least 130 cards.
Easy enough.
And does a lot of colorless cards. So they kind of roll the counter into the leader for this. Like if you're coming in with water type Pokemon, they're not going to be specifically powerful against his Chansey.
Right.
The way Chansey works in this is that you have a relatively cheap ability that allows you to take no damage for stalling. Mm-hmm. And then a thing that does 80 damage to the opponent and 40 damage to you. Yes. And Chansey has 120 health. You can do that three times before Chansey dies, which is a really good value proposition.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, we've got two leaders who do stall decks in a row.
Yep.
And this is, you know, even outside of the Psychic Club leader who we're going to talk about, who runs the king of all stall decks. Fuck him.
Yes. Yeah. The fighting club, when you get there, it's empty. You have to find the members and they're all hanging out at other clubs. This is so fucking tedious.
I do not care for it.
I talked to all these identical little nerds. Mm-hmm. And then just like one of them, I just missed.
Yeah.
You know, and I was just like, it was that feeling of just kind of going through talking to everybody over and over just to make sure I got everything. I had to like systematize it, like going through a labyrinth, holding the left wall to talk to all of them.
Yeah. Didn't care for it. You've got Michael, who rolls three types, fighting, electric, and fire. It's really just easy enough to bring in a, you know, just a grip, you know, like psychic, anything we'll do. We'll help you with this one. But does a lot of damage really fast. And then you have, Chris, who is working against your type advantage here, has colorless Pokemon, specifically the variety, like the normal type, who are resistant to psychic.
Yes. And then Mitch does, the leader does this Haymaker deck, as you mentioned, generally using Hitmonchan to do a lot of damage really quickly. But then he also throws in Hitmonlee, who can only attack the bench initially, and does like 20 damage directly to your bench, which is good. Tricky fight, you know? It's doing a good thing where it's showing you different tactics you could possibly use, which is the best thing that this could possibly do. You know, they are too easy, you know, and the computer brain is not very smart in this, but at the same time, like it is demonstrating.
Yeah. It can be a good teacher. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Lightning Club I found to be really, really easy, actually, just because these decks were way too specialized in a game full of over specialized decks.
The Brandon deck is sad. The Zapdos deck that you fight where he just stands there and tries to put one energy on and you take it off and then you just murder all of his Zapdoses in a slow and excruciating way.
Yeah. Like, they've got a ton of HP. Zapdos.
Yeah.
Goodbye, Dorito Bird.
Yeah. Just the Dorito Bird just getting hit one by one, one hit point at a time. Jennifer loves Pikachu. So she uses Pikachus and this is showing you those alternate types.
Yeah.
So it has the flying and surfing variants, which were promo cards. In Japan, flying Pikachu has a flying type move which attacks then makes himself invulnerable, which is really good, and then surfing Pikachu has water attacks as well. This is more of a cute theme deck, and this is early Pokemon, so we are with Fat Pikachu,
which
is wonderful. If the Pokemon company wanted to make all the money, instead of doing like, you know, Pokemon right hand, Pokemon left hand, the next one would just be one that's called Pokemon Chubby, and it would just return all the Pokemons to being chubby.
Yes.
And everyone would lose their mind. We all want it.
I need my Pokemon to be like those inedible dot candies.
Yes. Like a little gumdrop. Yeah. Like I just a tiny little teardrop, like a tiny miniature Grimace is how the shape of every Pokemon should be. Please. This fucking Lucario. This is just a guy with childbearing hips.
You
out of my fucking face. Yeah.
God.
No thanks.
Go home with that.
I hate it. I hate it so much. Hello, I'm Lucario. We must stop the dark energy. Shut the fuck up. You're an animal. I will kill you with a goddamn shovel. Like, I'm returning you to the pet store. That's right, your property. Fuck you, Lucario. But we must fight the dark psychic. Shut up.
Yeah.
Die.
I will spray oven cleaner in your eyes, Lucario.
I will raid you. God, I hate it.
He's not bug type though.
No, I know, but it probably wouldn't feel good.
Oh yeah, true.
You know,
yeah.
You can spray any kind of spray on any kind of insect.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you knew this, but back in that day, like I used to do that with insects, and it's like I didn't have bug spray, and there'd be one of those spentipedes, you know, those house centipedes that have spider legs. And you just spray air freshener on until it dies. That's not good for it. All spray is bug spray. Like, it's really like kind of a con.
Oh, you need the bug killing spray. Okay.
No, like the bugs don't like to breathe in things that aren't air. You know, they're not so different from you and I in that way. Like, you can spray them with anything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, just throw some hand sanitizer on it. It's not going to have a good time. You can kill a bug with anything. Like, bug spray is such a con. I don't know.
Oh gosh. The leader of the Lightning Club is Isaac, who is built up around magnetons, doing just self-destruct. Demonstrating lightning card's ability to hit stuff on the bench. It's fine.
Well, and it's also the magnetites, the smaller versions have paralyze, so it's kind of a stall, you know, to get the magnetons in place.
Yeah.
Thing. Kind of irritating because coin flips. A weird outlier is the Science Club. This one is based on poison cards, which you'd think would be in the Grass Club. This, I really like this. All of these are good to me. Poison, all these, you know, Mucks, Grimers, Ekans, Ghost Pokemon, all this stuff is really good. In terms of cheap colorless Pokemon, Nidorans, when they're evolved, are very powerful.
But they have to be evolved. So like the David Hughes deck is built around them. Like, you can just not knock them off. Like, they're incredibly fragile. These little bunnies. Never liked a Nidoran.
I don't know. They don't map on anything well enough for me. Eric does poison on you, which is very effective. As we mentioned, you want to load up some cure cards for the poison for this. And then Rick, the leader, uses ghost Pokemon, which are a kind of science, apparently. And, you know, those are really powerful. Like, Gengar is very tricky. The Haunter puts you to sleep. And then if you can stay asleep, so if you don't do that, if you can fail two coin flips after that, he can do 50 damage for a very low amount of energy cost.
It's ridiculous.
Haunter is very good. Only 25% chance of working, but it will do such a huge chunk. And then Gengar is even more powerful. Very, very powerful Pokemon with these nerds.
And then the Psychic Club. This one is going to give you trouble no matter what, I think.
It's kind of the end boss. Like, you can do them in any order, but I think that Professor Mason even sends you email saying, like, whoa there, cowboy. Hold off. There's jabronis to fight first.
This is just a bunch of people practicing bending spoons or whatever. You go in and fight these. I think I made a note about everybody in here because they all have something about them. Robert plays colorless Pokemon, again going against type here. If you are coming in with psychic Pokemon, assuming that you're going to be doing double damage to them, fuck you. Actually, here's Tauros and Kangaskhan.
Which for me, since I was playing largely normals, worked out, you know, just fine, but I could see how this would be really obnoxious for that.
Tauros is ridiculous.
Tauros is really tough.
Doing a ton of damage for very little energy, with the only downside being that it might confuse itself.
It also has attacks where it hurts itself and then can do more damage if it's hurt. It has that kind of thing. Stephanie relies on Mew. Their version of Mew is really tough. It cannot be damaged by evolved Pokemon. So depending on your strategy, that can really shut you down. Again, I was using a lot of colorless Pokemon that started out the gate. But by this point, I was also going real Dragonite. Dragonair, Dragonite, and this was a little bit tricky. Daniel relies on Sleep and Ghost. He's on loan from the Science Club. But then Murray does the stall deck based around Alakazam, who has the ability to move damage around the bench, and then puts on his bench Chanseys and Kangaskhans, which have maximum amount of health. So his Alakazam is there. You do 30 damage to it. His Alakazam just puts that onto a Chansey you don't care about, and then attacks you.
A Chansey on the bench.
On the bench. You cannot directly attack without a specific strategy. A really, really tricky deck. You know, one of the few times I had to, like, actually respec to beat somebody.
And, like, the only Pokemon that I know of that will, like, directly target the bench is Hitmonlee, who has a type disadvantage. Against psychic, so he can be taken out. You know, double damage is really bad, and, you know, a lot of the bench attack stuff for lightning either relies on, you know, your Pokemon dying when they use the attack or causing damage to yourself which means that you're hastening your demise against an enemy who is very specifically like trying to outlive you.
It's worth noting too that Alakazam's power to do this is a Pokemon power, so it doesn't cost energy.
Right.
So he can just do it. The way that I ended up getting around this eventually was sticking to my strategy, but it took a million years. I stopped Alakazam from attacking me. I could not stop him from distributing damage. So I just kept attacking, you know, trickled him, you know, down, doing, you know, my Dragonair attack that removes energy so Alakazam could never attack me. But it's still like he just moved all of his damage to Chansey until he had no choice but to keep it. You know, it took a million years.
Some gust of wind cards ended up being really useful for this. You can only have four of them, but it, you know, it is enough to like get it, you know, get him out long enough to bring in and, you know, kill one of his damage soak guys.
Which removes a resource from him as well, you know, which is really good.
I found Murray to be tougher than anything in the Pokemon Dome.
Yeah, he's tough. And the Pokemon game is not very, very hard. You go to the Pokemon Dome, they invite you in, you put in your eight little discs into the door and they let you into their weird room where they're waiting to die. There are four members here and they've built their decks around the legendary birds and then the final one around Dragonite. And you fight them in order.
And I didn't have a lot of trouble with this, actually, just because the legendary birds are very bad cornerstones for decks.
They're bad cards. If you can get them out, they do cool stuff. Specifically, the way these work is they're using their variants of the legendary birds. You can get more common versions. Their variants have something that is pretty complicated for this game, which is enter the battlefield effects. A really big part of Magic the Gathering, it's very rare in this game. So you have something like Arctic Uno, who comes down, and when he comes down, even before you can use him, he paralyzes your opponent. Things like that. Or when Zapdos comes down, he does a random amount of damage, does like 40 damage to a random Pokemon on either side of the bench. And then they use things like Scoop Up, which allow them to take their cards, put them back in their hand to replay their enter the battlefield effects. Not too difficult. Like I give it credit for having a concept, behind it. And that kind of scooping up and replaying cards for enter the battlefield stuff is a tried and tested card game strategy. None of these guys are particularly hard.
The last guy, you know, Rod, is easy because he's relying on Dragonite. Dragonite is at the end of a, you know, it's you know, you got to evolve into him.
It's a like, third stage evolution.
And like Dragonair is a is actually pretty good, you know, but it's still fine. Like Dratini can take it out. It's okay. Well,
and the old Dragonair is better. The new one that he does, the specific one, gives you Healing Wind, which is enter the battlefield effect that heals. Which can be good, but the old one is able to tag in, so you can put him in whenever you like, and has more powerful attacks.
And then the final challenge ends up being almost, again, a little lesson about not spreading your energy too thin, because you fight Ronald, who just got these legendary cards and decides, hey, I want to use them all.
Well observed. Like some dingus who is just like, this is so cool, and just threw all of them into his deck at once.
Like, it's not nothing, you know, like you said, you ended up needing to, you got right down to almost decking out, but like, it's a fundamentally broken deck. You can get around it.
It's just not very good. I was playing, I was also at the end and looking to be over. You know, which even in games I like, I tend to, you know, I see the end of the road and I want to get to it. So I was also being very aggressive with my Professor Oaks, with this guy. So he eventually does this, but he needs to have so much energy. So it doesn't matter. After you beat it, there is no, you can still play the game. You don't have to quit. You can walk around and get the rest of the cards if you want. Or you
wait, after you beat it, you wake up in the Undead Asylum.
The whole thing was a fantasy. The painted world of like Kantos or whatever the name of the specific island is. There's a sequel to this. It came out in 2001, published by the Pokemon Company, but never came to the United States. It has a fan translation. I have a repro cart with it. I have not played very much of it. largely because it is story forward. It's called Enter Team Rocket. And the last thing I want from this is more story.
Yeah.
That's true of just Pokemon in general. You know, like they're continuously adding more and more plot that I don't think is bad. I've got Arceus I borrowed from Brayden. I'm just like staring at it. I want to play it. But then multiple people have been like, yeah, there's 2 hours of isekai bullshit right at the beginning. Yeah. I was like, fuck. You know, I don't want to deal with that. I certainly don't want that in a card game.
No.
You know, so but this has more of a world to explore. It has some sets that are released between the games. It seems more complicated. Someday I will get through, you know, the talkie intro.
Yeah.
And play this.
People seem to really regard this well. The sequel. I don't know if that's just because they like things about these games that we don't, you know.
Yeah.
But
sometimes people get something from the story of Pokemon games that I don't get.
Yeah.
That has just kind of always been true, I think.
Yeah.
To be a master, you know, I just need to be the best in the land is not a very interesting plot to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then there have been a couple other attempts to digitize the Pokemon trading card game.
Yeah. There was the Pokemon trading card game online, which came out in 2011. And that was eventually brought to like mobile. And then in 2022, there is Pokemon Trading Card Game Live. I do not have any faith that these are going to be anything but money sucks, you know,
yeah.
Following on the heels of a Hearthstone or a Magic or a Marvel Snap or whatever, where they're really just trying to get you to buy digital booster packs or whatever the fuck. You know, I got no patience for that.
And to head off, like we know there are degrees with that, right? Yeah. Like you can play Marvel Snap without paying money and it's reasonable. You know, you can play Magic you can't play Magic online, but you can play Magic Arena. They give you lots of cards. Like you can't really be competitive, but you can play it, you know, casually. I did that for a little while. It's pretty fun. It's well implemented. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to spend real money on digital assets.
In a
general sense. You know, I learned my lesson, you know, with that. So I'd rather own a thing.
Yes.
It's also, I really like this because it is as simple as it is. I don't mind the complexity. Like I like playing Magic Arena. I like playing Chandelure, the Microprose Magic game, which is kind of a contemporary of this. It is more complicated. It's not that I don't want that complication. I don't want to play against other people for me. You know, I want to play against a computer, like a set challenge. I don't, because all these things have the solved meta problem. And because there's a money component, you pop on Arena, somebody who has spent more money than you has a better chance at having a better deck, which is a problem. A bigger problem is somebody who keeps up with the meta and is just like, oh, this is the dominant deck in the format, will use that deck.
Yeah.
And there's lack of surprise to it. You know, that kind of stuff is not fun to me. I am much more of a kitchen table card player. And this, to me, emulates that a little bit by everyone being shitty. Nobody being good at the game except for me. It emulates me being the unpopular kid who has like practiced the fighting game at home, but I'm not actually I studied the blade, but I'm not actually, you know, omitting anybody. No feelings are actually hurt because it's fake little digital men.
Yes,
you know, I love that.
That's the Pokemon trading card game. Nice little trip down memory lane for me.
I love it. It is a fun game. I for this might be my third time I played it. I'm probably gonna play the sequel before I play this again. But I can imagine like in 6 years being like, I don't know. I kind of want to fuck around with this. Maybe I'll get different rares and end up playing a different strategy, or maybe I'll challenge myself to just do fire or something like that.
You know,
only use types I haven't used. Like it's a pretty easy recommend, especially now that it's on Switch Online. You know, and it's a nice way to kind of boot yourself into collectible card game thinking, which like same thing with Inscription, you know, like when you go to chapter 3 of Inscription, chapter 2 as well, where it's closer to a collectible card game. It's a fun medium. You know, it's a big part of games. Same thing with deck builders. Like these are cool dominant forms of games now, and having a digital version where you can play without social pressure or very much financial buy-in, I think is awesome.
You know, I mean, also as somebody who hasn't thought about the Pokemon trading card game since I, you know, played this back in the day, but also like, I don't know, I put those cards away and kept them and occasionally look at them, but like never really thought about the mechanics or whatever. It is fun coming back and looking at it with more sophisticated eyes, you know, for varying levels of sophistication, varying definitions rather, and just be like, oh yeah, like there are huge holes in the way this was designed, like that I can absolutely, you know, take advantage of, but like it is super charming because, you know, number fuck balance, a video game is to me the more fun, the more breakable it is.
Well, and just things that you knew. It's funny coming back to this kind of thing with vocabulary, where when I was playing it and was bad at this and Magic when I was young, there were still some strategy things I knew kind of intuitively, you know, like you would have things where you would do certain things and you would win more and you'd recognize that on a subconscious level, but you didn't have the vocabulary to really understand what you were doing necessarily. At least this is my experience. I want to speak for other people. And it's fun to go back to it now where I can be like, oh, this is what is happening. This is the strategy I'm taking. This is why it works. This is why this is valuable. Like, to me, that's games, baby. Like, that is what I'm playing video games for. That's why I like thinking about mechanics. No. Like, what is this doing? What am I doing to make myself more successful?
Yeah.
You know, what choices am I making? It comes down to, like, a puzzle of sorts. And it's a satisfying puzzle to solve, I think. So, yeah, good shit. If you're listening to this and you are a non-straight, non-white, non-cis, non-man person, and you have a project and you'd like us to shout it out, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. Please include pronunciation and your pronouns. I have a streamer here I'd like to shout out, and we have a link tree here for all of the things. Linktree apparently is, everyone else knows about it but me. I was like, oh, Linktree, neat. The website is Linktree, the way that's spelled, which is linktr.ee. And then / fix your heart or die. Your is you are. This is Olivia, who is a streamer, does a bunch of things, but specifically right now is doing a stream of Armored Core 6 on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So I know that there's certainly people who are like super interested. And that right now it is taking the world by storm. Check it out. Why not?
Yeah.
Watch Fix Your Heart or Die.
Hey, Olivia, I like the Twin Peaks, the Return reference in your username.
Yeah, there we go. And then the, also if, you're for Souls fans, listen to this, they're in our Souls show. But they also, guested on the Totally Trans podcast to talk about Dark Sun Gwyndolin.
Awesome.
Worth a checkout.
I need to listen to that shit.
Yeah, that sounds cool. I'm always interested in perspectives on that because like it's interesting and shit, we don't know nothing. it is good for us to learn from other people about takes on Gwyndolin.
Linktree / fix your heart or die.
You're with is you are.
Yes.
As well. What should people do if they have things to say about us and this show?
If you have things to say about this month's games, which are Castlevania Aria of Sorrow, the Pokemon trading card game, or Doom Eternal, which is our premium game this month, go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in by September the 15th. And if you have thoughts about October's games, the deadline is October the 15th. Those games are Amnesia, The Bunker, Dredge, and Signalis. If you have thoughts about multiple games, please separate them into multiple responses.
Yeah, makes it possible for us.
Yeah.
The other thing you can do is tell your friends or rate and review us on your podcast directory of choice. Mm-hmm. And please join us in thanking our producer, Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen. Gwen edits these episodes and puts them out. We really appreciate her work.
Very much so.
Yeah. Back us on Patreon.
Yes,
to get those premium episodes. Doom Eternal and Signalis, of those games we mentioned, are the premium episodes for that. $5, you get every premium episode we've done, not just the most recent one. Access to a whole bunch of bonus stuff as well.
Yes. Yeah. We think it's good value. Until next time, what should they watch out for, Cole?
Watch out for my Zapdos. Oh, he's dead? Oh. Okay.